Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in the book of Ruth, chapter 3, verses 1 through 18. I'll cover today. We'll entitle this chapter, Ruth and Boaz at the Threshing Floor. Our context is this. In the last chapter of Ruth, chapter 2, Ruth had met Boaz as she went out trying to find a field she can glean in. And so we continue from here. Ruth, chapter 3, verses 1 through 3. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Now is not Boaz our kinsman, with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking." Now, what's the time of this when Naomi says it? Well, it was after the harvest was over, and traditionally there was a feast after the harvest. I'll go into some greater detail as far as the timing later on in this lesson. Notice Naomi says, "I want it to be well with you." What she means is, I want you to have a husband. So these two ladies, mother-in-law and daughter-in-law, they're out doing the traditional thing that women did in ancient societies when there was not a job market for women. They were looking for a husband. That sort of activity somewhat still goes on today. Now, Naomi and Ruth, they did a good job because they landed a good man, Boaz. And this was their plan. First of all, Naomi says, look, Boaz is our kinsman. Now, Naomi apparently thought, wrongly thought, that Boaz was the next of kin. He was not the closest kinsman redeemer. There was another kinsman redeemer who was closer to Ruth, to Ruth's husband, deceased husband, Mahlon, closer in relation than Boaz was. But Naomi probably didn't know that, and so she's thinking, okay, Boaz is obligated by law and custom to marry my dear Ruth. Now let's look at the law about kinsman redeemers. First of all, kinsman redeemers were supposed to redeem land lost to poverty, and Naomi's deceased husband Elimelech had owned land, and it had been sold because of poverty. There was a famine, remember? That's why Naomi had gone to Moab, where she met Ruth, where her son Mahlon married Ruth. And so the scripture says, the law says that a kinsman redeemer, a close relative, as the NESB has it in many places, is supposed to buy that land back out of hock, if you will, and return that land back to the family of the man who originally owned it. We see that in Leviticus 25, verse 25. If a fellow countryman of yours becomes so poor he has to sell part of his property, then his nearest kinsman is to come and buy back what his relative has sold. Now, that verse is cited by several commentators, including Cambridge, as the law that binds Boaz to buy the property. However, you will notice that Naomi is not just asking Boaz to buy the property back for her, but she's asking Boaz to marry the deceased widow of her son. Well, there is a law that says a kinsman redeemer was supposed to marry a widow, a particular type of kinsman redeemer, in Deuteronomy 5, verse 5. When a brother lives on the same property and one of them dies without a son, the wife of the dead man may not marry a stranger outside the family. Her brother-in-law is to take her as his wife, have sexual relations with her, and perform the duty of a brother-in-law for her. Well, but the problem with that is Boaz was not Ruth's deceased husband, Mahlon's brother. So how does the law apply to Boaz? Well, this is what Kyle and Delitzsch say. According to Ruth, chapter 4, verse 5 of this book, it had become a traditional custom to require the levirate marriage of the redeemer of the portion of the deceased relative, not only that the landed possession might be permanently retained in the family, but also that the family itself might not be suffered to die out. So in other words, those two laws were combined. The nearest kinsman redeemer had to buy the property out of hock, and then he had to marry a widow whose husband had formerly owned the property. So those two customs were combined. We see this in Ruth chapter 4, verse 5. Boaz said, on the day you buy the land from Naomi, he's talking to the next of kin, the closest kinsman redeemer here. Boaz is only number two. On the day you, closest kinsman redeemer, buy the land from Naomi, you will also acquire Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the deceased man, to perpetuate the man's name on his property. So that was the custom, apparently, as they had elaborated on Moses and combined the law of the kinsman redeemer and the law of Levirate marriage such that the closest relative had to get all property out of hock of the deceased man and then also marry the deceased man's wife to keep his name alive. Now, we'll say this, Boaz was not Mahlon's brother. He was somebody else. And I suppose that what happened there is they just expanded the Levirate law in a case where you don't have a brother, a surviving brother to marry the widow. You go to the nearest male relative who's single and free and can marry the male relative. Now, Naomi says that Boaz is winnowing barley that night at the threshing floor. Let's look at this custom of winnowing, as Adam Clark says, quote, "The winnowing process is performed by throwing up the grain, after being trodden down, against the wind with a shovel. The threshing floor, which was commonly on the harvest field, was carefully leveled with a large cylindric roller and consolidated with chalk, that weeds might not spring up and that it might not chop with drought. The farmer usually remained all night and harvest time on the threshing floor, not only for the protection of his valuable grain, but for the winnowing. That operation was performed in the evening to catch the breezes which blow after the close of a hot day, and which continue for the most part of the night. This duty, at so important a season, the master undertakes himself, and accordingly, in the simplicity of ancient manners, Boaz, a person of considerable wealth and high rank, laid himself down to sleep on the barn floor at the end of the heap of barley he had been winnowing." So there we see why this rich man was lying on the floor at night. It was because he wanted to protect the grain, and also he had to direct the harvesting, the threshing, which was an important process in his agricultural business. So that's what he was doing there for. As far as these winds are concerned, Clark says they blow all in the evening and blow in the middle of the night. Cambridge says, in Palestine, a wind rises from the sea at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon and lasts till half an hour before sunset. Doesn't mention any night breezes. But the point is that explains why Boaz is at the threshing floor. And this is an opportunity that Naomi, sharp-eyed Naomi, sees, because normally Boaz is at home. And how can a poor woman like Ruth approach a great man like Boaz while he's at home? But on the threshing floor, she's got a shot. So Naomi says in verse 3, "Wash yourself, anoint yourself." That means put on some perfume, put on your best clothes. Whoo! The arts of seduction. Women know how to do this. And Naomi is so clever, she also says, but don't make your move, don't make yourself known until Boaz, until he's finished eating and drinking. Why? Because when he's finished eating and drinking, he's going to be a little bit warm with wine, full in his stomach, happy. In other words, don't get him in a bad mood now. Don't get him when he's hungry. Get him when he can focus on your beauty. Now, there's one little problem that I've noticed here. In verse 2, Naomi says, "Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight." Well, there's a problem, because in Ruth 2, verse 23, the last verse of the last chapter, we read this, "Ruth stayed close to Boaz's female servants and gathered grain until the barley and the wheat harvest were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law." But here, Naomi says, go up there because he's threshing barley. Doesn't mention anything about wheat. Naomi doesn't. Well, what's the answer to this? I think this is the answer. The wheat harvest was just behind the barley harvest. The Cambridge commentary says the wheat harvest was 2 or 3 weeks later. The pulpit commentary says that the wheat harvest was 1 or 2 weeks later than the barley harvest, and so you have both grains being threshed at the same time. Well, let's look at the timing here. We know that the barley first fruits, the barley harvest, started on Nisan 16, and then 50 days later, the first fruits of Pentecost, which is the first fruits of the wheat harvest, was 50 days later. That's 7 weeks. But the end of the barley harvest could have happened just before the wheat harvest started, and it could be winnowing simultaneously with some late harvested barley and some early harvested wheat. So threshing of both the barley and the wheat could be occurring at the same time. That has absolutely nothing to do with our story, but I thought it was interesting. And in the interest of being complete about this, I thought I would go into that. Now, just to reiterate, what was he doing down there at night on the threshing floor, not during the day? It was because they had to catch those sea breezes coming off the Mediterranean, and that's why he was down there winnowing at night. Now, in verse 3, Naomi says, Ruth, you got to make yourself known to Boaz. Well, didn't Ruth already know Boaz? Remember, Boaz had said, come glean with my maids. He basically treated her like one of his own servants. You get to eat the water. He gave her a meal. He knew Ruth, and we assume they've been talking and get to know each other during this time that she was gleaning the forest. Well, it could be that Ruth needed to make herself known because she's all dressed up, kind of like Maid Marian in The Music Man. She had her hair all up in a bun and nobody knew who she was, and all of a sudden she let that hair down. Ooh, it's a different woman. He was used to seeing Ruth working in the fields. He might not have recognized her all dressed up for action. We go now to Ruth chapter 3, verses 4 through 7. It shall be when he lies down, Naomi continues, that you, Ruth, shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do. She said to her, all that you say I will do. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and Ruth came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. Now, at this point, the Western mind will think this is a little bit forward, maybe a little bit inappropriate, sexually inappropriate. Well, actually, no. When the scripture says that Ruth uncovered Boaz's feet, we need to remember that in that culture it was common for servants to take bedclothes and pull the bedclothes over themselves to keep warm. Ruth didn't really cover herself with Boaz's personal clothes, most probably. What was she doing? Well, before we discuss that, let's look at verse 4. Naomi tells Ruth in verse 4, uncover his feet and lie down, and then he will tell you what you shall do. In other words, Naomi's thinking Boaz is the next kinsman. He wasn't. He was the next kinsman, but she's thinking he's the next kinsman. Perhaps she was thinking Boaz, since he was a man of great wealth, was a judge, expert in the law. He knows what's going on. He'll know about the law of kinsman redeemer, and then he will understand the situation and do his duty. That's what she's thinking. Now, let's go back to this practice of uncovering his feet. Now, it wasn't an immodest act. There were other men and women present, maybe not right at that spot. They didn't know about her there because later on, Boaz said, you need to get out of here without telling anybody that you were here. So it was private in that sense, and nobody directly saw them. But they remember they were probably in an open shed on the threshing floor. There were other people there that had been threshing at night. There was nothing immodest about this. Nothing sexual was going to happen. The NIV Study Bible says, actually, this was a customary way to request marriage, which I always think is interesting. In that patriarchal culture, a woman is asking to get married? Well, that's basically what she's probably doing. Now, we're going to see later that it depends on how you translate. Depends on a translation. It might be she was just asking for Boaz's personal protection, but we're going to assume here she's asking for marriage. Here's what Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says about this custom. Quote, similar or singular as these directions may appear to us, there was no impropriety in them according to the simplicity of rural manners in Bethlehem. In ordinary circumstances, these would have seemed indecorous to the world, but in the case of Ruth, it was a method, doubtless conformable to prevailing usage, of reminding Boaz of the duty which devolved on him as the kinsman of her deceased husband. Boaz probably slept upon a mat or skin. Ruth lay crosswise at his feet, a position in which Eastern servants frequently sleep in the same chamber or tent with their master, and if they want a covering, custom allows them that benefit from part of the covering on their master's bed. Resting, as the Orientals do at night, in the same clothes they wear during the day, there was no indelicacy in a stranger or even a woman putting the extremity of this cover over her. Now remember, they're not in their pajamas. They're in the public here on a threshing floor. So what she did, I don't think, was sexually indecorous in any shape or form. Reminds me of the time, one time I was on a flight with my wife from New Orleans to Atlanta. There was a hurricane, extreme weather disturbance, and all flights got canceled. We couldn't fly out of Atlanta, and the hotels filled up because so many flights had been canceled. The airlines put everybody in the hotels, and we had to spend the night in one of the rooms of Delta Airlines. And the brilliant people who ran Delta Airlines managed to put the temperature at about 60 degrees. It was so cold, it was unbearable. And it was the summertime, so we didn't have heavy clothes on. I just had short sleeve shirts. My wife decides to stay up all night because she can't get rid of her contacts because she's scared she's going to lose them. I can't stay up all night, so I lay down on the floor, and I remember thinking, this is hell. This is what hell is going to be like. I'm freezing to death. And I was lying down, and all of a sudden I heard this female voice speak to me, and there's this girl lying on the floor with her boyfriend, and they were under a blanket, and they were warm. And that girl must have heard my teeth chattering or my bones shaking. I don't know, but she realized I was freezing to death, and she says, get under the cover. And, buddy, I did not care about modesty. You can say whatever you want. You can think whatever you want. I did not care. All I was thinking about was survival. And I got under that cover, and I got warm, and I went to bed with pleasant dreams about how I was going to sue Delta Airlines for every cent that they were worth. Well, anyway, it all depends on the circumstances, and Ruth was not doing anything immodest. Now, contrary to that a little bit is what John Gill says. He says this, quote, yet after all, it must be owned, it is somewhat difficult to account for her simplicity and wisdom in it, since she could not be sure that sin and folly would not be committed, considering the infirmity of human nature, or that such a behavior in Ruth would not alienate the affection of Boaz from her and cause him to consider her as a light and loose woman unfit to be his wife. Well, John Gill's got a suspicious mind. He thinks that Boaz is going to think Ruth is coming on to him. I don't think Gill's right about that. I don't think he would think that Boaz would think that Ruth is coming on to him. But it does seem to me that Naomi and Ruth are rolling the dice here. Even if Boaz didn't think she was acting immodest, and at any rate, she was acting forward, at least it seems to me. Hey, I want you to be my kinsman redeemer and marry me. That's basically what she's saying. But on the other hand, we need to remember that she had developed a relationship with Boaz by now. She'd been working with him, or at least with his overseer. I suppose that she would see the owner of the fields periodically as she went through the barley and then the wheat harvest. So it wasn't totally forward. On the other hand, though, Ruth could look like a gold digger. Boaz was a man of great wealth. Ruth was very poor. She says, gets under his clothes there. He wakes up. He says, aha, she wants me to marry her. And Boaz could very well take that as saying, she wants my money. Here's what Adam Clark says about it. We cannot easily account for this transaction. Probably Naomi knew more than she revealed to her daughter-in-law. In other words, Naomi knew that, or at least she thought she knew that Boaz was the cleansing redeemer, and so she's saying, go in there, you'll be all right, he'll take care of you. The experiment, Clark continues, however, was dangerous and should in no sense be imitated. Dangerous, I don't know in what sense it was dangerous in Clark's mind here, but at any rate, this was not a risk-free transaction. At the worst, Boaz could think that she was, well, the worst, she could think, Boaz could think that Ruth was trying to get his money, trying to marry him for his money. Now, one last comment on this. Adam Clark says, it is said that women in the East, when going to the bed of their lawful husbands through modesty and in token of subjection, go to the bed's foot and gently raising the clothes, creep under them to their place. And those were the days, my friend. We thought they would never end. But what Clark's comment here makes me think is that Ruth was doing something very modest. She was showing herself to be at the complete mercy of Boaz. Boaz, if you want me, take me. I'm willing to serve you. So instead of it being a crass move, I think it should be interpreted, and Boaz so interpreted it, as a very modest move, a humble action. We go now to Ruth chapter 3, verses 8 and 9. It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward. And behold, a woman was lying at his feet. He said, who are you? And she answered, I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative. Now, in the middle of the night, Boaz was startled. John Gill says he thought he might have seen a demon. He wakes up, and instead of seeing a demon, he sees a pretty young girl lying at his feet. Ah, but the devil comes as an angel of light, does he not? I can't imagine what he thinks. He wakes up and there's this girl lying at his feet. And she immediately says, hey, I want you to spread your covering over your maid. Now, of course, she's not talking about the literal blanket. Whether Boaz's robes or his bedclothes, whatever it is, that's not what she's talking about. If the word is translated correctly here as covering, she's saying, I want you to marry me. for you are a close relative. Close relative is the NASB's ways of translating kinsman redeemer. John Gill here says that it's not bedclothes, but it's actually Boaz's garments. And Gill speculates that some sort of ritual was done by covering with a garment. Well, it seems to me, I think I was just reading it, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, that's how you ask somebody to marry you. So that's the kind of ritual it was. Now, let's look at the translation issue of covering. Ruth says, spread your covering over your maid. The Hebrew for that could be wing, could be translated wing. So it would read this way, so spread your wing over your maid. And in that case, Ruth would be asking for protection, not for marriage. Let me read you the quote from the NIV Study Bible. Quote, this may have been a play on words in the original language. Garment singular referred to a custom that had to do with making a marriage proposal. The same word plural could mean wings, suggesting that more than marriage, this was a request for protection. Boaz used the term earlier when he said Ruth trusted God by taking refuge under his wing. That's in chapter 2, verse 12. So Boaz could be saying here, or Ruth could be saying here, Boaz, spread your wings over your maid, protect me. In which case, she's just asking for financial protection, not for marriage. So it's a little bit ambiguous. Sort of ruins the romance of it, does it not? So we're going to say it, spread your covering over me. Ruth is saying, please marry me. We go now to chapter 3, verses 10 and 11. Then he, Boaz, said, may you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. Now, Boaz has a very positive reaction to Ruth. He could have been unpleasant. He could have called her an immodest woman. He could have called her a gold digger. He could have been angry at her for waking him up in the middle of the night. I'm assuming that Ruth woke him up in the middle of the night. Maybe she rolled over and hit his feet or something. Doesn't say why he woke up. He was startled, whatever had happened, so maybe he rolled over and kicked her or something. But at any rate, he woke up, and in the middle of the night, when people tend to be sort of grumpy when they get wakened rudely, he wasn't grumpy at all. He was very complimentary of Ruth. And he says, your first kindness is better than the last. Your last kindness is better than the first. What was her first kindness? Well, she was faithful to her first husband. She supported Naomi, her mother-in-law, in a strange country, in Moab. That's pretty good. But her last kindness is even better. She's actually trying to build up her dead husband's family. Her dead husband was Mahlon, trying to build up Mahlon's family by seeking out a kinsman redeemer. And so Boaz, he doesn't even think about the fact that he was just proposed to for marriage. All he's thinking about is, wow, she's trying to preserve her family name. This is a different cultural thing. This is off of our radar scopes. So he doesn't think about marriage or the fact he might be tied up in a conjugal arrangement that might last the rest of his natural lifetime. No, he's thinking about, oh, she's keeping the family name alive, Mahlon's family name. So Boaz says, you're keeping the family name alive. Your last kindness is displayed by not going after young men. In other words, you could have gone after young men, whether poor or rich, gone after them for their money, gone after them for love or romance, whatever. You didn't do it. Now, if she'd have gone after some young man that was not a kinsman, that means the family name would die out. The patriarchy would be lost. Her dead husband's family would have died out. And Ruth was probably attractive enough to get some young guy instead of the old Boaz, the old rich guy. Gill says that Ruth was amiable, virtuous, young, and beautiful. And I don't know how he knows this, but you know, everybody starts thinking poetically when they read the book of Ruth. Now, in another age, this era, I just watched a YouTube video, but I love to watch these women. They're not Christians. At least I hadn't found a Christian one yet. But they give advice to men on how to deal with women. And so they talk about what women like. And since they're women, you tend to kind of think that they know what they're talking about. And I was just watched one where the woman kept saying, young women love older men who are stable, who are confident, who lead them. I said, whoa, you sound like a Christian. And you're not. Because it's hard to snuff out biology. The feminists try, and they have failed, fortunately. And so Ruth didn't go after young men who who probably didn't have money and who would not have kept the heritage alone, but she probably liked Boaz, because Boaz is obviously a leader. He's a leader in the city in Bethlehem. He has money. And so, you know, she wants money, all right, but she wants more than money. She wants a good man, a good husband, and she's made herself vulnerable right here in order to get him. Now, Boaz says in verse 11, "Now, my daughter, do not fear." Now, why would he say that to Ruth? Don't fear. What could Ruth possibly fear? Well, she could have feared being despised by Boaz as being immodest or aggressive or maybe even despised for being poor. She could fear that. She could fear, it's basically fear of rejection. And Boaz is saying, "Don't worry, I'm not rejecting you, Ruth." He continues on and says, "I will do for you whatever you ask. For all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence." Now, that shows it's good to have a good reputation. And Boaz wanted to help her. We don't know whether he has any romantic feelings for her yet or not, but he knows that she's a good woman, and he wants to help her. Now, of course, the help that was asked for was to be a kinsman redeemer, and that involved marriage. But remember, back then, there was not all this romance stuff. It was more of a practical economic arrangement. But it's obvious here that he really admired Ruth. And so he's probably not averse to marrying her, actually. We go now to Ruth chapter 3, verses 12 and 13. Boaz continues, "Now it is true I am a close relative, a kinsman redeemer. However, there is a relative closer than I." There's a kinsman redeemer that's closer than I, Boaz. "Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good. Let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning." Now, the first thing I think of with my Western mind is, well, my gosh, how is Ruth going to think about that? I'll go to the first guy, and if he casts you off and doesn't want you, I'll take you on the rebound, Ruth. That doesn't sound very romantic. Well, again, remember, this is a different culture. They got to go by the law and by the custom, and the closest kinsman redeemer's got to have first shot. Or the first, either you can look at it this way, the first opportunity or the first duty. Now, who this other guy is, we don't know. John Gill says they were first cousins. Adam Clark says they were uncle and nephew. How do they know that? That's total speculation. It doesn't matter. Now, again, as I said earlier, and Adam Clark says this, that Naomi probably didn't know about this guy. That's why she was sicking Ruth on Boaz, trying to get Boaz. She probably didn't even know about this first guy. Or it could be the first guy was poor, didn't have enough money, and so Naomi knew that and decided to go after the bigger fish, but I suspect she didn't know. Now, why did Boaz tell Ruth to remain there on the threshing floor all night long until morning came? Well, if she'd have left in the middle of the night, well, that might not have looked so good. Not to mention the fact you got a woman that's alone at night. You know, bad things happen to women walking alone at night. Somebody saw her, they might think, some hanky-panky's going on. So he says to remain. And then he says, if kinsman redeemer number one doesn't redeem you, I, Boaz, kinsman redeemer number two, as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Now, that "as the Lord lives," of course, is a common oath, because of course the Lord lives. It's a common way of swearing, to be emphatic about your assertion. So we go now to Ruth chapter 3, verse 14. "So she lay at his feet until morning and rose before one could recognize another. And he said, 'Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor.'" That's the NASB translation. "She got up before one could recognize one another." That would be dawn. You know, when it's just real, I mean, it's not totally dark, but the sun is below the horizon. It's reflecting off the sky, and you got just a little bit of light. So nobody could see who she was then at that point, most probably. And then Boaz says to somebody, "Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." Well, first of all, we got a translation issue here. Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor, or let it not be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. Now, how you translate that affects your view on who Boaz is talking to here. I'm going to assume that it's a. The Holman Christian Study Bible notes, well, the Holman Christian Study Bible translates it as a, and their note says that the Septuagint and the Masoretic text reads thee. Well, of course, those are the two major texts that are used to translate the Old Testament. There are some other texts also that are used, and the Holman Christian Bible Study found some other ones because A makes more sense. Let it not be known that a woman came to the threshing floor, and that would be assuming that Boaz is talking to Ruth. Now, he could have been talking to his servants. He could have gone to his servants and said, "Let it not be known that this woman, the woman came to the threshing floor." But the problem with that is the fact that he talked to his servants is tantamount to saying that the secret is out, because the servants are going to talk. and so Ruth's reputation would still be damaged. So I don't think he was talking to his servants. The other option is he's talking to God. He's saying, God, let it be known. Let it not be known. Please, God, don't let it be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. Don't let people find out about this. I might be hooked for life, or my reputation might be bad, or which would mean even though that Ruth didn't mean anything sexual about it, people looking on might think something's up. But I don't think that's what it is. I think he was talking to Ruth, and A is the better translation. We'll just take it that way. And he's saying, Ruth, you got to be careful. Don't let anybody see you. Why would he say that? Well, to save her reputation. Now, not only her reputation with people in general, that she would be seen sleeping with a man at his feet, but also her reputation with the closest kinsman redeemer. Now, if he found out that Ruth was sleeping under Boaz's bedclothes in the middle of the night, well, if it's not a sexually scandalous thing, which I don't think it was, but sleeping under the bedclothes, as we've noted, is a common way of asking for marriage in that culture. And there was nothing sexual. There were other people present, maybe not right there at that haystack, but in the general area. So there was not going to be any hanky-panky going on. But the kinsman redeemer number one would know that, hey, she didn't come to me first. She went to Boaz first. I don't think I want to deal with her. I'm second choice. I'm not going to settle to be second choice. And so that's probably why Boaz said, be quiet here. I got to go talk to this guy first. I'm not going to let him know that you have already asked me. We go down to Ruth chapter 3, verse 15. Again, Boaz said to Ruth, and by the way, the again there makes me, obviously he said verse 15 to Ruth, give me the cloak that is on you. That's talking to Ruth. That's not the servants or to God. That's Ruth. And so when he says again, he's talking to Ruth in verse 15 is again, that makes me think in verse 14, he was also talking to Ruth. So in verse 15, he says, again, he said, give me the cloak that is on you and hold it. So she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. Then she went into the city. So Ruth, assuming that she there is Ruth, assuming that she is a translation issue, some NIV note says that most Hebrew manuscripts have she, but many Hebrew manuscripts in the Vulgate and the Syriac have he. He held it. Doesn't matter. Somebody held cloak. Boaz, it's probably Ruth. Boaz poured 6 measures of barley, which is about 15 gallons, John Gill says, which is a right heavy load for a woman, and laid it on her. And then she went into the city. Well, excuse me, I got the wrong she there. Obviously, Ruth held the cloak. The she that's questionable is the one that went into the city. She went into the city. Either she did or Boaz did. Doesn't really matter. We go now to Ruth chapter 3, verse 16 through 18, and we will finish this audio. When she, Ruth, came to her mother-in-law, she said, Naomi said, how did it go, my daughter? She's waiting there with bated breath. And she, Ruth, told her, Naomi, all that the man Boaz had done for Ruth. Ruth said, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Then she said, wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today. Well, now, why did Boaz give 6 measures of barley to Ruth to give to Naomi? He wanted to show Naomi that he was pleased with Ruth, and he wanted to marry Ruth, if he could, if it was possible. And Naomi's no fool. She realizes 6 measures of barley, hot dog, this man likes my daughter-in-law, things are looking good. And they're looking so good. In verse 18, Naomi says, well, just hold on. Just sit here and wait. We'll see how the matter turns out. This man will not rest. Obviously, he's not going to rest. He's already said he's going to leave. He said, stay here. Boaz says, stay here all night. I'm heading out in the morning. It's now morning. Ruth is home. And he's out dealing with the closest kinsman redeemer. And Naomi knows what he's doing. So Naomi had already figured out Boaz's heart. The barley confirmed probably what she already knew. And so things are looking good. Ruth is sitting in the catbird's seat. Either the first kinsman redeemer will take her, in which case their poverty is relieved, or Boaz will take her and their poverty is relieved. Plus, Ruth has a nice, handsome, rich husband. So, ladies and gentlemen, on that happy note, we will leave this audio as we are now prepared to go to Ruth chapter 4 verses 1-22 in the next audio, and we will see Boaz redeem Ruth. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.